Righto, well, we're back again, Shilty. It's two ordinary coppers, or as we like to put it, two very ordinary coppers.
That's exactly right, mate. So we spoke about in the last episode about PTSD, and, you know, it was probably a pretty deep subject. But so what we're going to do is lighten the mood a little bit.
Yeah, so, I mean, we like to move across from... Yeah, I think it's good that we spoke about that. That's, you know, PTSD and whatever else. We'll go into things like that and dealing with the trauma of the job. But... the biggest thing for me about policing was it's not that. It's the funny stuff. It's the times, the really memorable things of your mates and the funny stuff that happens. And it's also a huge coping mechanism, as you know. So we thought about it and we thought, well, we've got a couple of stories that each of us can tell. So we're going to go through just some of the very funny stuff that goes on. Because, I mean, like I said, I've said 1,000 times, if you don't have a sense of humour, I don't want to know you.
No, that's exactly right.
So It's just an essential part of policing, any emergency services. For God's sake, accountants. If an accountant doesn't have a sense of humour, I don't want to know them. So we're going to move it on, and I'm going to kick off with just a couple of stories, and we might work off each other and see how we go.
Yep.
So in around 2008, 2009, we were in Katherine Police Station. We were both stationed there at the time, and in shifts, you get to a point in the night where things have settled down a bit, and you know, 3 a.m, everyone's tired, you might be back updating jobs, it might be a van, or someone's out rolling around, or going to a little job or something. And anyway, this is what was happening one night. It's 3 o'clock in the morning, and everyone's tired, and one of the guys was just out cruising around by himself. And we hear him call this pursuit. So in Katherine, heading northbound out towards Darwin, it calls in the pursuit, but the vehicle's not stopping, but it's only doing about 40 k's an hour. So anyway, he clicks out through town, and for those who know Katherine, or those who don't, the Stuart Highway runs sort of east-west through, but then quickly turns back to the north, heading up to Darwin. So this vehicle's gone over the high-level bridge, heading out towards, or heading in the direction of Darwin, and just over the bridge, there's a little industrial area, and then there's a road off to the left called Florina Road. It turns back on itself just slightly more than 90 degrees. Like, it's just, from my memory anyway, it's a steep corner, and the road's quite wide there. But just on the northern side of Florina Road, as you get around that corner, is a BP depot. Look, it's a fuel depot. So this pursuit has gone out there and around the corner and down. So we're sitting back at the station, and we quickly, obviously, there's a pursuit being called over the radio. And the guy who's calling, really good cop, he knows what he's doing. So it's a good, clear call. We're going to head off after him and help out. So I think from memory, there were two vans that went out. And we're in those fantastic little two-wheel drive Hiluxes.
Yep.
So you'll remember the ones.
Yep.
They've got the same engine, same running gear as a four-wheel drive, but with none of the weight, nice and low. And they used to be rough, really rough with just a normal tray. But if you put a steel cage on the back, they run like a sedan. Just, it balances out the suspension. It's just fantastic. So we're heading northbound out of town, and we're clicking through town. So we're, you know, probably 80 k's an hour or something through. Nobody around. But as we get over the bridge, we open up. So we're away. Anyway, we get out there, and anyway, I'm accelerating up. I know I have to turn left, but we're starting to increase the speed. And anyway, the corner comes up, so as you know, with driver training, hard to the right of the road, and then turning back to the left to cut the racing corners. So for anyone who hasn't done it, you sort of get trained how to drive a bit the way racing drivers do, just because it's the quickest, most efficient way to drive. Anyway, we're heading out. The call's coming through quite formally. It's an operational call, so you know, it's professional, but I took the corner really quickly, and I just couldn't quite get the car around. My partner's grip got the death grip happening on the door. So we go around the BP depots on my right, and just so as to not start skidding, I just leave the road. It's all smooth and flat. I left the road, went right over by the Bowsers, blew past the Bowsers in just a flash, and moved back onto the side of the road. Well, behind me, and not far behind me, was my shift supervisor, and he was in a Falcon, a lot faster car, but he'd left after us, so he's now caught up. Anyway, the calls are coming through from the pursuit from the fella who was running the pursuit, and I'm sort of getting back on the road like, holy bloody hell, that was close. Anyway, perfectly timed humour. He goes, what was the price of fuel, Bob? And we're tearing through, and we're all having a laugh then. Continuing outbound as we're trying to catch up to this bloody pursuit, we finally do catch up to him a little bit, but it's 40 kilometres an hour. So we're lights and sirens. Like, it's something out of the Benny Hill show. We're lights and sirens. The lead car's behind him. We're behind that. We're out in the bush. Lights and sirens are going. We turn the siren off because it's too bloody loud. We keep hipping along. And anyway, I remember my partner and I, and I'm not mentioning him because he's still in the job and I'm not.
Yeah.
So we were both smokers back at the time. And I'd forgotten this part.
Yeah.
So we're like 40 k's an hour in a pursuit. It's like, want a smoke? Yep. So we're driving along. We've just had this funny call from back around, getting around the corner. We're poking out steady, having a cigarette. Anyway, eventually, old mate comes to a gutzer in the gutter because he's just so drunk he can't drive the car straight. Anyway, he's quickly arrested and wound up. And we all come out for a bit of a chat. And we're all having a yarn. And he's sitting down in the group as well and having a smoke with us all. And that was the end of that. It was all pretty relaxed. But it just showed that little timing of humour, that good little radio call from the ship supervisor that just broke the tension.
Yeah.
And it was good.
And it's those sense of humours that I think really help in the police when you go through those incidents. Yeah, because, I mean, how fast would you have gone through the survey? Oh,
100 k's an hour, faster Bowser.
Exactly. And, yeah, it was a bit of a boo-boo, but you lighten the mood,
yeah,
and you move on, and it's a good way to sit there and go, yeah, like, you know, you put your hand up, go, yeah, I stuffed up there, but we made it funny.
Oh yeah,
and there's so many stories. We've got to shoot one later on, which we'll tell, which both of us were involved in. But one of my stories, mate, I'll start off. So this is back in, I think it was 2008, and we got called. There was a murder out near Top Springs Hotel out on the Buntane Highway. It just happened just off the highway on the way to Yarralin. And anyway, we get called because I'm working out at Kalkaringi. Mm. And so they give us a call and said, I'll
let them know that area.
Yep.
So that area of the Northern Territories, that very, very remote area and very, very hot desert country, nothing for hundreds of Ks.
Yep.
So if anyone from the eastern states, we're talking extremely remote Northern Territory.
Yeah. Sorry. Well, no, that's exactly right. I mean, if you look at it, to put it into context, you go out on the, what's the Western Freeway out towards...
Victoria.
Western Australia.
Yeah.
Like that, yeah, it's 120 k's from Katherine to the turnoff, and then I think it's 170 from the turnoff to Top Springs.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's where we are. But we're actually at Kalkaringi, which is another 170 k's into the Tanami Desert. Basically, or the edge of the Tanami Desert would be that, I think, yeah. But, so anyway, we drive up from Kalkaringi. We arrest this guy. This guy is huge, right? So the thing is, we've actually got to get his clothes off him because he's still wearing the clothes. This is a day later. He's still wearing the same clothes that he murdered this bloke in, right? So all we can find is a Hector, the safety driving cat shirt. So we're sitting there. This is the only clothes like we've got. And this guy is 6'4". And, you know, built like a Mallee Bull. Mm. He's huge. And he, to the point that when we actually arrested him, and he hops, we had the Land Cruiser, hops in, and you can see the suspension sag as this guy gets in the back. But before that, we arrest him, and he's sitting down with his family, just eating chicken on a, you know, on a campfire, just on the other side of the road from the Top Springs Hotel.
Mm.
And anyway, and we sit there and go, you know, mate, you're under arrest, you know, for the murder of blah, blah, blah. And, well, I think Charlie said at the time, he said the unlawful killing or the death or something.
Yep.
I can't remember his exact blurb. And this guy stands up, you know, and I'm 5'10".
Yeah.
Charlie's probably, a bit over 6 foot.
Yeah.
And this guy, like, towers over it, and he's huge. And we're just looking up going, geez, I hope he comes
willing. Yeah, you play nice now.
Anyway, so we said, oh, look, mate, we've got to get your clothes off you and all that. And he completely agrees, you know, not a problem. We walk into the toilets there next to the Top Springs Hotel. And he takes off and he puts on this Hector, the safety road cat shirt on. And it's like a midriff top. But so anyway, we seize the stuff, put him in the cage and we drive all the way into Katherine. Then what we had to do is went on having a talk to him. We discovered there was two crime scenes. So one where the actual where they were drinking, and then they went in a car, and then they killed him at another occasion, or they tried to carry him back. I can't remember the exact details, but so we had to go out and establish a crime scene. So we got forensics, the late great Keith Curry.
Keith Curry, yeah.
And it was Charlie and myself, and I can't remember who else was there, but there was a couple other detectives. And anyway, so we're gone and. Like this is even further on, about 50 kilometres off to the west from the Buntane Highway where this crime scene we located. Anyway, we're walking around. It's stinking hot. You know, the flies are terrible. You've lived in the desert long enough. It's just terrible. Like you've probably got 40+ degree heat, and we're walking around, and we're not really feeling much love because there's very little forensics and all that sort of stuff. And anyway. Keith Curry, the best dry sense of humour you can get. And he sits there and he goes, and he turns to all of us, goes, well, he said, you know, like when you do the coronial investigation, you can put recommendations. I'm going, yeah, okay. Well, this is getting pretty serious. Like, what are you thinking here, Keith? And he goes, well, he said, I think there should be a warning put on all beer cartons. Oh, yeah. He said, well, he said, I think, you know, death may result if consumed.
Yeah.
On the last can of beer.
29 cans will be safe as houses, but that last one, instantaneous violent death may occur.
Exactly. Well, and the thing is, and people probably won't believe this if you haven't been in the territory, but I know a number of crimes that got committed over a can of beer.
The last can of beer.
Yeah, that's right.
We're not talking there were four and someone missed out.
Exactly.
No. I think you've told me another time, and I was aware of it as well, where when you count how many drinks, or you ask them how many drinks have they had, they might say three or four, and you think, oh, geez, what, three or four buckets? And they go, no, three or four box.
Yeah.
Three or four cartons.
Yeah.
And we're talking very heavy VB cartons.
Oh, yeah.
And if I drank that much, and I don't mind a beer, but I would be belly up somewhere, definitely.
Well, and this is one of the funny things when we started in the police, like you do your first interview and then you're sitting there, you ask exactly like you said, and you go like one or two, like, oh well, that's not many.
Yeah,
like, are you serious? And they go like, not cartons. Oh right, okay. Yeah, anyway, right.
Now we're talking to some serious consumption. <That's right. laughs> So yeah, no, it's just it's a very unique place, those communities out there, and the sheer remoteness means that you wear a number of different hats.
Yeah.
And I'm going to roll into another. And these stories, they're bad stories, but the humour's what we love about
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
So, speaking of remote areas and doing different jobs and different things, when I was very junior, I was relieving in Pine Creek. And I'll caveat this as well. We'd had a big night. It was someone's birthday in the town. So, Pine Creek's a very small place, and everyone knows everyone, and the pub's fantastic.
Yeah.
It was the only place I ever relieved where I lost money and gained weight. So you get travelling allowance, obviously, while you're out. But we had every meal at the pub. And anyway, so we're spending quite a bit of money. But the night before, we'd had a few beers because it was somebody's birthday. I can't remember exactly what the go was. But the next day, my partner and I, the permanent member at Pine Creek and myself, we were a shade dusty.
Yeah.
We're at work, we're doing our thing, but it was just a weekday. There wasn't much happening. And, you know, we were just poking along. Anyway, I think it was maybe mid-morning, I get a phone call. I took the call, and it was just before the days of Triple O coming through to the major comm centre. So it still would come through to the police station.
Yeah.
And then after hours, I think we routed it through. I can't remember exactly how that worked. So anyway, I enter the call. It was a 000 call for help from a cattle station not far away. And the person who called says, we've had a plane go down out here. And my initial reaction was, is anyone alive? And she's gone, no. Like, and righto, so job's on. So we round up what we need, and there's a fire and emergency rescue group. So equivalent to like an SES combined with Rural Fire Service sort of group.
Yep.
But it's all in one because it's a small place and they just do all the training. So anyway, we notify them as well and out we go. Because the report is there's also a fire and everything else. So out we go. It's about an hour. It's quite an hour and a half, 2 hour drive out there. We get out there and there's two very obviously deceased people in this plane. And long story short, we've locked down the crime scene. Detectives came out from Catherine. And then the main forensics, so your crime scene examiners from Darwin have come down as well. And there's an old crime scene examiner called Tim Sandry, he's been in the job forever. What he hasn't done in forensics, what he doesn't know about forensics isn't worth knowing.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's there and he's sort of by himself and just needs a bit of help. This is the next day, I should add. So we need to, obviously, the scene's been processed by Tim, but now the role is to recover the bodies out. So obviously, there's been a fire. There's not much left. It's a pretty bad scene. But you could tell the bodies were there, but there was, you know, it was pretty graphic.
Yeah.
Anyway, I get in as a junior probie, and I'm helping him get the bodies out. And you know, they fall apart. So we're trying to put them back together in the body bags. And anyway, while we're doing this, I pick up one of the those little chunks. We could tell basic arms and legs and things like that. Well, what was once an arm and leg. So we're putting them in the body bag. And I picked one up. I couldn't quite identify what it was. And just the way that they were lying, it was a bit tricky to tell what side of the bodies and that sort of thing. So I picked up Tim because he seemed to have an answer for everything else. Yeah. And I say, hey, Tim, what's this? And he goes, lump of human flesh, mate. And I thought, just that instant response. And to the point where a few of us chuckled.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I mean, think of what we were doing. We're putting a poor bastard into a bloody body bag. And that little comment comes out and just breaks the tension. It took away that, wow, this is pretty macabre.
Exactly. Sort of, I'm just going to break it up there. Can you just explain like the where you are as well?
Yeah. So we're in bushland So where their airstrip was, where this crash happened. So we're basically south Pine Creek, so about an hour west of Pine Creek out in the bush. We were off the southern end of the airstrip, about a kilometre from the actual airstrip. So we're in bush. We're quite a distance in off the main drag. And there's just nothing there. There's nothing around. It's hot. It was November, so it's bloody hot.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're bagging these guys up. And it was a pretty harsh old job.
Yeah.
And just to do it with a little bit of humour, and like my old saying is, if you're shoveling shit out of a hole, if you're having a laugh, it's a good job.
Yeah.
So we're doing this job, and it just broke that tension. I'll never forget that, because it did break the tension, and it was a pretty full-on job.
Mm.
So we get that, and obviously the boys can't be identified. We have a rough idea who's in the plane, but we didn't know who was who. So the bags were bagged up and just B1 in a big texture on one bag and B2 on the other. Now, for those of you with young children, that's bananas in pyjamas, B1, B2.
Yeah.
Anyway, the bodies are transported, and we transport them in the police cage back to the Pine Creek police station, just because it wasn't accessible enough for funeral services to come and get the bodies. Anyway, being the junior probationary constable, it was my job to sit outside with these bodies and just babysit them for a while. And it, one of the fellas came back through, and he was at one of the detectives or something from Catherine. I can't remember who it was, but walks through, looks at me, looks at the bags, and you can see B1, B2. And he looks back at me with a straight face and goes, you thinking what I'm thinking, B1? I think I am B2. And that's not in any way having a crack at the poor bastards in those bags. No,
exactly.
But what it is doing is just using humour to lighten the load. And we both had a laugh.
Mm.
Never at the expense of the deceased, but there was laughter in the room. There's laughter there. And anyway, those poor buggers, they're off to the funeral service, and we wrapped the job up, and yeah, I think the next day we recovered the aircraft. So it was about 3 days of pretty full-on hot work out in the bush.
Mm.
And it's just made that little bit easier by having a chuckle. And that's what we did. We had a laugh, and then that night we're having a beer and a laugh, and that's just the way it is. People can say that's insensitive, and I would say to them, you didn't do the job.
Mate, that's exactly right. It's something what you need to understand is, you know, it's horrible, some of the jobs we have to do. And it's called a dark humour.
Yeah.
You know, and you sit there, and like you said, it's no expense to the victims.
No, of course
it's
not.
It's just, the thing is, we go to an incident, and we have to actually, I suppose, we shut down our emotions. Because emotions cloud judgment, and we have to do, to be the best service to those people in the plane, or whatever you're investigating, you need to take emotion and everything out of it.
Yep.
I think you said, you got told early on, it's you actually approach it with disinterest.
Disinterest, yeah. Yeah. So the other thing with that is, these are not our tragedies.
No.
And that sounds cold-hearted, but I think, you know, the average person won't go to a lot of tragedy in their life. We went to a lot of tragedy, and we have to delineate between our tragedy and this tragedy that isn't our tragedy. We're just dealing with it.
Yeah.
The trouble is, we're still human, and that does affect you. And the way to cope with it is this funny humour. And it's dark, and it's terrible, but I'll tell you who have it. Ambos are terrible for it. Bloody nurses. My God.
Nurses are the worst.
Nurses. Doctors have it. The good doctors have it. Fireys have it.
Yeah.
You know, I think school teachers have it to an extent.
Yeah.
Not in the same sort of way, but any of the emergency style workers have an outstanding dark sense of humour. And naughty.
Yeah.
And rascals.
The nurses especially. Yeah.
Oh, rat bags.
Some of the stuff they come out with is absolutely hilarious.
Perfect.
Yeah.
For anyone who goes to a dinner party with the nurses, try and eat your dessert while they're describing the poo they cleaned up the day before.
That's exactly right.
But we were talking before about pursuits, and I recall a certain pursuit that you took charge of that contained a bit of humour as well, mate.
Exactly, mate. I can't even remember the year. It would have been 2009, probably. I think we were getting towards the end of when George and I were working the TAC team. And so what we were doing is, because we were originally put on this commander's tack team to tackle unlawful entries and all that sort of stuff, and then we towards the end, because we'd actually, you know, managed to solve a lot of them. So what we used to do is a lot of proactive stuff. So we'd just drive around the town in the Hilux, a four wheel drive Hilux, the traffic one, and we're just, you know, pulling over a few cars and, you know, just doing, yeah, tickets and breath tests and all that.
Just
sort of thing.
Real highway patrol happy stuff that makes me think you're a great bloke.
That's right. Yeah. Well, most people don't like traffic cops.
No, me included.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. so we pull over this car, and it's just down on the on that road that heads out west. I still can't remember the name of it. Heads out west towards Kununurra.
not the Victoria Highway.
Yeah, Victoria Highway. That's it. And we pulled down, and we're just off the Bernard Street Flats, you know, just we pulled them over the side of the road there. And anyway, we get out, there's five people in the car, right? All highly intoxicated, including the driver, which blew a high range, which a high range is 0.15 and above.
Yeah.
And so he's quite intoxicated. And what you do there is you sit there and nobody else can drive the car. They were heading out to Binjari, but nobody else can drive the car because they're all drunk. But the good thing is they had family in the Bernard Street Flats down the, you know, just down the street, about a couple hundred metres away. So I said, well, you guys, the passengers, you can walk down there and, you know, just sober up and then you can drive back out. Anyway, so we arrested this guy. We've taken him back to the station. And what you do there, because he's highly intoxicated, you basically put him in the cells. He sits on, you know, 137.
We'll explain all that. So that investigatory detention, so he's held in there until he's sober and for the matter to be investigated so he can be charged and not be intoxicated when he's charged so he actually knows what's going on.
Yeah.
Has a clue what's happening. And Binjari is a small Aboriginal community just outside of Katherine.
About 10 Ks out. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
So anyway, we lodge him in the cells and then as we're leaving, we get called, funnily enough, to a domestic. It wasn't a serious one, but it was one out of Binjari, because all the other crews were tied up. They said, oh, you know, can you attend and assess? Yep, not a problem. So we're heading out back on that Victoria Highway again. As we're coming up to where this car was parked on the side of the road, we see it pull out. We're going, hold on a minute. Everybody in that car was drunk.
Legless.
And they had the keys.
And so, Schulte, describe drunk in Katherine.
Drunk? Well, put it this way, and you can. I've actually breath tested one of our local informants, an Indigenous bloke. He liked to drink all the time, and he had quite a good sense of humour. Mm. We had a conversation with him one day, like you and I are talking right now.
Mm.
We put him on the breatho just for, you know, shits and giggles. 0.25.
Yeah.
So this is like, but when they're really drunk, like they're getting up to the 0.4 and all that sort of thing, they're like staggering.
Yeah, we're talking intoxication levels off the charts.
Yes, like an average person would be dead.
Oh yeah,
these guys, you know, some of these, and it is sad, but some of these people just sit.
It's just the reality.
It is, yeah, it is a reality. And so anyway, we see this car, and I think we were heading out, and this car's like seen us and just gunned it. So we're going, well, we're in a pursuit.
Mm.
So anyway, we've called it out over the radio. Said, yeah, all right, you know, I can't even remember the code for the forest. Yeah. Anyway, we've called in, said, you know, we've actually become involved in a pursuit. You know, Barbara heading westbound, you know, on the Victoria Highway, you know, current speed, we were doing about 120 and it was probably just coming into the 100 zone.
Mm.
And they're skyrocketing, like that thing's doing 200 plus.
Yep.
It's pulling away from us.
Mm.
And our car, really, you're probably scraping, because it was a bit old by then too, you like the Hilux, you maybe get 170 out of it.
Oh yeah,
like it's so we are losing this. Mm. Like, you know, and this guy's like flooring it out there. Anyway, what I'm going to do is I'm going to hand over to Damo, because as soon as this, we called this in, this is his side of the story.
Yeah, so we obviously heard the original trap, and I was working at the same time, but I was in a general duties van as a senior partner with a junior member who at that stage, oh, she had been in the job for a couple of months, if that. Really junior, very smart girl, but like very, very green, had no idea really. And that's not taken away from her, that's just how life is.
Yeah.
Anyway, she was driving, I was in the passenger seat, and we'd picked up a couple of drunks, just as you do, and we were going to take them back to what we call the sober up shelter, but I think we're on our way to the cells from memory because the sober up shelter was full. These guys weren't too bad, they were drunk, they just wanted looking for a sleep at that time in the afternoon. Anyway, I hear this pursuit come over, and I'll caveat, you wouldn't do this now,
no.
The policies have changed and things like that, but we prioritised the pursuit over these guys. Anyway, I saw another group sitting off to the left, off the main drag, heading out towards the station in Katherine, and they were drinking in a circle, and normally we'd pull up and tip that out, but anyway, I said to my partner, pull over, and she didn't know what I meant, so we're going to go to that pursuit, just pull over for a sec, I'll get these guys out. So I run around, she pulls over, I run around to the back, let them out, and say, come on guys, go over there, family, and they didn't know what I was doing, but I released them, just said, go over there, sit with family, we'll see you later on. Anyway, I jump back in, and away we go. I was going, right, let's get there, lights and sirens. So I've reached over and pressed the alert button on the lights and sirens. So now lights and sirens have activated on the car.
Yep.
And our speed did not increase one bit. So she's driving along at, I think it's an 80 zone there. So she's doing 80 in the 80 zone. And we've got a long way to go. So where we are, we have to go about 15 kilometres just even to catch up to where you blokes are at the moment. And you blokes are outbound at a lot faster than this.
Yeah.
So you're heading towards Kununurra at 170. The target vehicle's in front of you doing about 200.
Yep.
And we're raging to back you up at 80 kilometres an hour.
And your car actually can go faster than ours.
Oh, yeah. 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 So this was a two-wheel drive Hilux. So they can click along. They'll push up to 180, 190. You wouldn't want to do too many turns at that speed with them, but they're pretty good. They click along fairly well. So we continue out, and then we turn into a long stretch called Bicentennial Drive, which goes between the Stuart and Victoria Highways, and we're heading out that way. And it's an 80 zone there, and I think, to her credit, at that point she was doing 100. And I'm like, come on, we really need to get there. Let's get into it. Oh, you know, okay. To her credit, it was her first emergency vehicle driving session, like for real, apart from training. So first time she'd gone hard lights and sirens, especially with me in the car, which probably wasn't easy for her.
Yeah.
Anyway, at the same time, I hear this 262 mobile. So 262 was the supervisor vehicle, and it was a Falcon, a blue.
262 or 263?
I can't remember.
It was 263.
So the Falcon's come out and gone mobile, and the fella driving that, good sergeant, and a bit of a ratbag, Cannon will have a good fast drive if he needs to. So to give you some perspective, he's about 3 or 4 kilometres behind us, and we're outbound. He's now trying to catch up to us. I'd say a minute later, we're still walking along about 100 on this connecting road. About a minute later, this blur of red and blue screams past us like we're parked on the side of the road. And I hear just the Doppler effect of the whoo as they passed, of the siren screaming. And anyway, very quickly, he's out there and catching up to you guys and all the rest. But so what's happened, you guys had obviously resolved it. So you want to click on there and tell us what happened out there.
So while this, what Damo told you there, while that was going on, we've sitting there, and George is driving along, and he's sitting there going, look, we need some pursuit music.
Yeah.
So he's got his iPod out, all right, and he's sitting there trying to find some good music to play so we can actually rock along as we're trying to chase this car. We're doing 170. It's pulling well and truly away from us.
It's a real thing.
That's right. And anyway, I'm sitting there going, and this is the thing, like people, you know, sometimes you get the red mist or what they call it and all that sort of thing, but we were pretty good at that stage. Like, you know, you're just getting used to all this sort of stuff. So and it wasn't an overly dangerous pursuit because it's a long straight highway. There's no other traffic. No. So I'm sitting there deciding, I'm going, come on, this thing's got to go faster. So I've put the window down and like slapping the side of the car, trying to, you know, like you do with the horse races.
Just laughing along.
trying to get this car moving.
Shorty the jockey trying to get the old girl to you breathe a bit harder, old girl.
and it was a hot afternoon too, so compression wouldn't have been that good in the motor. But we're heading out there. And now this guy, right? He's driving, he's flogging us, no chance of us catching it. Even 263, it would have been, probably still, 5 kilometres behind. So if he turned off the road, there's no way in the world that would have, and we were just losing sight of him. He's going over this hill.
So that's to that point where it would probably be about to be called.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
But then he's decided, well, let's make this a bit more fun. Mm. So he stopped, done a U-turn, and tried to ram us.
As they do.
Now, he's in a Ford Falcon. We're in a four-wheel drive Hilux. Yeah. It probably wasn't his best option. But he's tried it anyway. George actually did an excellent job. He manoeuvred out of the way, so there was actually no contact. And then he screamed back towards Catherine. So we've already gone past Binjari at this stage.
Yeah.
And so we'd probably, 15 Ks out of town. And he's just then started screaming back in towards town. Well, that's right. He's heading straight back towards you.
Yeah.
And because we heard you call over the radio on 263.
Yeah.
And anyway, and then he's decided, basically, I think he saw 263 coming up as he's getting to the Binjari turnoff. So he's actually driven the car off the side. It was quite a steep embankment,
right,
too.
Yeah.
And he's jumped out and run into this long grass. And I remember you rocking up because you must have come in just after he got out of the car and was hiding. And what you've done is you've driven up to like the Binjari turnoff bit, and then you come along the fence line. So we've got him surrounded.
Bit of a cordon, yeah.
Yeah. And his missus, I'm not sure whether his wife or his girlfriend or what it was sitting in the car. You know, we didn't realise she was in there when he took off.
Mm.
But anyway, we've located him, we've arrested him, put him into the cage. And the whole thing about that though, this guy, all right, he was extremely drunk. He would have been 0.2 and higher. He obviously ran away from the police. He sped, the offences, it was a hamburger with the lot.
Oh, yeah.
The other thing is, he also had a domestic violence order, which is a non-intox, so you can't be drunk whilst with her.
Yeah.
and she was in the car with him doing all this stuff.
Yeah. Love it. Just the classic, the Catherine two-step.
Yeah, that, well, that's exactly. Yeah, breach the well, hang assault, yeah. Yeah. But you know, it's that sort of humour. You know, like you're just having a joke as you're going it. It's
having a laugh the whole time.
You know, most people, like you do get adrenaline hits with all that sort of thing. Like it's, and you've got to be switched on when you're doing it, of course. But it's just, yeah, I suppose it's, I don't know. It's our personalities. Once you've been doing it for a while, you just do that sort of stuff to lighten the mood.
Look, we're getting pretty long-winded, but I do have one more. You just reminded me of this. When you're weary and, you know, long days and hard work and you've been out in the bush, it's hot. Two of my very good friends were driving back. They were working together for some reason, and I don't know exactly where they were, but I'm pretty sure they were out remote somewhere, and they're driving back in from a, like what would have been a long bush trip.
Yeah.
And anyway, they felt the need for a comfort stop. Anyway, so they pulled over, and they've gone down either side of a culvert underneath the road. The culvert's quite large, well, you know, a decent height, so they can't see each other from either side. I mean, not that they're worried about that, it was just the way they went. Anyway, one of the guys down the other side, they're both sort of having a leak and a bit weary, and one of the guys just has a snap decision to lighten the mood a bit. He draws his Glock pistol from his holster, points it to the ground into soft dirt, and lets a round go. Now, for anyone who's fired a Glock 40 S&W handgun, It's a loud, horribly uncomfortable pop. Yeah. It's not a bang like a riot. It's a big, loud pop. So that sounds bad enough in open ground. But when you concentrate that sound through a bloody culvert straight at the other person and then have them having a piss at the time on the side of the road. So the poor bugger on the other side has got such a hell of a fright from the over. His whole world's been rocked by this bloody god-awful bang. Apparently he's jumped so high that he's lost control of everything he had hold of and covered himself completely in piss. So he's lost it. I think the best part is that he got a good sense of humour, so he got that. He thought that was funny, but he's worn his own bloody piss. The other fella has, I think, underestimated how well this particular prank would work and has lost it so much he's barely been able to reholster his gun.
Yep.
He's laughed so hard he's doubled over and just about kneeled in his own bloody pee. He can't drive, he can't see, he can barely breathe. He's laughing so hard about how spectacularly well his bloody well-thought-out prank's gone. I'm fairly certain, and it may have been exaggerated to make a point, but I'm fairly certain they had to swap drivers because he still wasn't capable of driving for a good 10 minutes later because the laughter just kept... He just couldn't comprehend how well that little joke worked.
Yeah.
Now, I want to let you know, it's perfectly safe. We're out in the middle of nowhere. There's no one for miles. The round was fired straight into the ground. It's probably against rules. Well, it's definitely against the rules.
Yeah.
But, by God, it was funny.
That's why we won't name the people.
That's right. But, by God, it was funny.
Well, and just explain it too, because sometimes you go out on these bush trips and you get very little sleep.
Oh, you know, yeah.
It's, you're working your ass off, basically.
Yeah, you're working really long hours. You're doing lots of paperwork. You're out there. You've got comms that aren't real good. You're probably sleeping on a swagon in a air-conditioned muster room inside a little bush police station.
Yep.
If you're not in a visiting officer's quarters, but which is, you know, sometimes the case. So you get pretty weary, and when you're driving back, you're weary. Like you really, it's been a hard day. So something like that,
it lightens the mood, to a certain extent. And like I said, everything's safe.
But I guarantee you no one talks about the trip where nothing happens.
No, that's exactly right. Anyway, Damo, I think it's time to finish this one up. We've gone a bit over time, but that's all right.
Yeah.
So I hope you enjoyed the stories.
Look, humour's going to be an ongoing part. It just has to be part of it. Funny stories in policing just go hand in hand. So we'll talk more about this, but we'll come back next time and we'll go again.
Yeah,
this is Two Ordinary Coppers.
And, very,
very, very,
very ordinary.
We'll talk to you next time. All the best.
See ya.